What a beautiful song. It's great to be back here and out of the heat of the Central Valley. It's beautiful here. The weather is great, just like Jack says, all the time. I want to ask you guys a question this morning. Why are you here? Why are we here today, this morning? Why do we gather together on Sunday mornings? Why? Now, there are a few different ways you can answer this. Of course, you could say that we come here to worship, of course. Right? We come here to pray to God as one body. We come here to sing to God, to worship God. And also, you could say, you know, we come here to encourage one another. We come here to fellowship, right? And also, we come here to listen to the sermon and to learn more about God and how we could be better as Christians. But if you open up to Acts chapter 2, you see in Acts chapter 2, verse 42, it says, they were continually devoting themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship, to the breaking of bread and to prayer. And again in verse 46, day by day, continuing with one mind in the temple, breaking bread from house to house, and they were taking their meals together with gladness and sincerity of heart. And also, if you look at chapter 17 and verse 17, you see that the first century Christians were gathering every single day. They were gathering every day to listen to sermons. They were gathering every day to worship together. They were gathering every day to encourage one another and to fellowship with one another. Acts 17:17 says, so as he was reasoning in the synagogues with the Jews and the God-fearing Gentiles and in the marketplace every day with those who happened to be present. That's talking about Paul in Athens. He preached every day. The first century Christians were gathering every single day to worship together. So what makes Sunday morning so special? What sets that Sunday morning gathering apart? You know, we don't just gather on Sunday mornings. You know, we normally will gather on Wednesday nights as well, Sunday nights, and also we'll gather together. You know, some congregations will have lady studies throughout the week, and some congregations will have youth devotionals throughout the week. And so there's different times throughout the week that we gather together. But what makes this gathering so special? It's the Lord's Supper. It's the one thing that we do on Sundays that we don't do any other day of the week. When we gather together, the Lord's Supper. So, if someone asks you, why do we take the Lord's Supper on Sunday mornings? Why today? Why not? Oh, why can't we take it on Wednesday nights? Or why do we have to take it every week for that? I mean, some denominations only take it, you know, once a month, a couple times a year, whenever they feel like communion is necessary for them. But we take it every week. If someone comes to you and asks you why on Sunday, what are you going to tell them? You know, us as Christians, we need to be able to give a defense of the things that we believe in, right? A logical defense, a logical argument for the things that we believe in. So this morning, I want to give you exactly that. A solid, logical argument for why we take the Lord's Supper on Sundays. And now I got the points of this argument from a class I took in Bear Valley. And my teacher was, his name is Wayne Berger. And so just so you know, this is where I got that from. It's not my own. But hopefully I can share this with you this morning and you can maybe bring it up if somebody asks you why you believe this way, why you do the things that you do, why we come together on Sunday mornings to take the Lord's Supper. So in this argument, I'm going to break it down very simply, and the first point that I want to make in this argument to prove why we come together on Sunday mornings to take the Lord's Supper is, first off, Christians are commanded to assemble. Simply enough, my first point, Christians are commanded to assemble. This is a very easy to understand thing, right? It's easy to grasp that we have to gather together as a body. I don't think anybody really disputes that. But we're supposed to gather regularly. If you look at Hebrews chapter 10, Hebrews chapter 10 and verse 25, you'll see that the writer of Hebrews, I'll start in verse 24. He says, "And let us consider how to stimulate one another to love and good deeds, not forsaking our own assembling together, as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing near." So the writer of Hebrews is trying to get his audience to think about other people, right? And to think about their fellow Christians, and to get them to think, get us to think about how we can stimulate one another to love and good deeds, how we can encourage one another. And the only way that we can encourage one another is through fellowship, and in order to have fellowship, we have to gather together, right? We have to get together. And Paul says, or not Paul, the writer of Hebrews, sorry, "not forsaking our own assembling together, as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day is drawing near." So we're supposed to gather regularly, right? This is our first point here in this argument. We are commanded to assemble. Second, Christians are commanded to take the Lord's Supper. Again, this is a very simple thing to prove, a very simple idea. I don't think, again, anybody really disputes this, that we are supposed to take the Lord's Supper. If you look at Matthew chapter 26, verses 26 through 28, this is one of the classic texts that people go to during the Lord's Supper message. But Matthew chapter 26, verses 26 through 28 says, "But while they were eating, Jesus took some bread, and after blessing it, he broke it, and he gave it to the disciples and said, 'Take, eat, this is my body.' And when he had taken a cup and given thanks, he gave it to them, saying, 'Drink from it, all of you. For this is my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many for the forgiveness of sins. But I say to you, I will not drink of this fruit of the vine from now on until that day when I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom.'" And also in 1 Corinthians, if you look at 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verses 23 through 26, you'll find a very similar passage. You know, we are supposed to take the Lord's Supper. These are passages that explain how we are supposed to take the Lord's Supper. It says, 1 Corinthians 11, 23, "For I received from the church that which I also delivered to you, that the Lord, in the night in which he was betrayed, took bread. And when he had given thanks, he broke it and said, 'This is my body, which is for you. Do this in remembrance of me.' In the same way, he took the cup also after supper, saying, 'This cup is the new covenant in my blood. Do this as often as you drink it, in remembrance of me. For as often as you eat this bread and drink the cup, you proclaim the Lord's death until he comes.'" So we're supposed to be doing this until he comes, right? We are supposed to take the Lord's Supper. We are commanded to take the Lord's Supper. And it's laid out, you know, how we're supposed to do that. And again, I don't think anybody really will contradict that. But how often are we supposed to take it, and when are we supposed to take it? That's where it gets a little tricky. You see, the first two points that I made, they're very strong in that they are commands, right, that we can find in the Scripture. But the next two points I'm going to make are based off of examples that we find of how the first century Christians lived out these commands. Now, when you are studying the Bible, there are a lot of different commands and a lot of different examples that may or may not be binding on our lives. For instance, there's a lot of good people and good examples of things that people did throughout the Scriptures, but not all of them are good. There's a lot of sin that happens in the Bible, and obviously we aren't supposed to live that out. And we see many different commands that may not apply to us anymore because there are two different testaments in our Bibles. And we don't necessarily live by the Old Testament law anymore, right? And so as you're studying through the scriptures, you have to go through these different examples and commands and figure out which ones apply to us today. And specifically when you're talking about examples, there is a principle that states if an example is binding if it illustrates a command. An example is binding if it illustrates how to carry out a command. And so, for instance, my next point in this is that the first century church assembled specifically to take the Lord's Supper. And we see this is an example of first century Christians carrying out two different commands, right? So this example is going to be binding on our lives because it illustrates, shows us how we are supposed to carry out commands given to us by God. So again, first century church assembled specifically to take the Lord's Supper. If you stay here in 1 Corinthians chapter 11, you'll see starting in verse 17, Paul says to the Corinthians, "But in giving this instruction, I do not praise you, because you come together not for the better, but for the worse. For in the first place, when you come together as a church, I hear that divisions exist among you, and in part I believe it. For there must also be factions among you, so that those who are approved may become evident among you. Therefore, when you meet together, it is not to take the Lord's Supper, for in your eating, each one takes his own supper first, and one is hungry and another is drunk. What, do you not have houses in which to eat and drink? Or do you despise the church of God and shame those who have nothing? What shall I say to you? Shall I praise you? In this I will not praise you." Now Paul is condemning the Corinthian church for not taking the Lord's Supper in the correct way, right? They had divisions among them. They had cliques. Not everybody was getting together. They had ongoing arguments, and the congregation was butting heads. And some of the more popular people got lots of the Lord's Supper. They got lots of bread and lots of wine. And those who probably weren't so popular didn't get any. It says some were hungry and others were drunk. And he says to them, "Do you not have houses in which to eat and drink?" And so they weren't treating the Lord's Supper like the solemn memorial that it should have been, right? But the point here is that they gathered specifically to take the Lord's Supper. They gathered specifically to do this. And also, they were doing it wrong, but they gathered specifically to do this. And also, again, in later on in the chapter in verse 33, Paul says, "So then, my brethren, when you come together to eat, wait for one another. If anyone is hungry, let him eat at home, so that you will not come together for judgment. The remaining matters I will arrange when I come." So, again, the first century church gathered together specifically to take the Lord's Supper. It's why they gathered. They had a special gathering. They got together many other times throughout the week, but there was something special about this gathering, right? They gather together to take the Lord's Supper. And also, in Acts chapter 20, in verse 7, you see, it's written, "On the first day of the week, when we were gathered together to break bread, Paul began talking to them, intending to leave the next day, and he prolonged his message until midnight." But he says, "When we were gathered together to break bread." Again, first century Christians assembled specifically to take the Lord's Supper. That's why they gathered together on this particular day. Now, what day was that? We'll see that the first century church assembled specifically on the first day of the week. The first century church assembled on the first day of the week. And that's found right here in Acts chapter 20 and verse 7. It says, "On the first day of the week," right? On the first day of the week, when we were gathered to break bread, Paul began talking to them. And also, you can find more evidence for this in the verse before. It says, you know, we sailed from Philippi after the days of unleavened bread and came to them at Troas within 5 days, and there we stayed 7 days. And on the first day of the week, when we were gathered to break bread, this story happens. Somebody falls out a window, but that's not important right now. It was because Paul preached too long, but anyway, Paul and the people who were with him, Luke was with him at this time, the writer of Acts, when they got there to Troas, it says they stayed 7 days, and then on the first day they worshiped with them. Now, why would Paul wait 7 days? You know, he was coming back from a lot of the churches in the area. He had a lot of money with him. He was gathering a big collection from a lot of different churches and bringing it back to the people in Jerusalem to help spread the gospel. So he had a mission to be on. Why did he wait here 7 days? And the explanation that my instructor brought up, and the one that I believe, is that they must have gotten there after worship. They must have gotten there into Troas maybe Sunday night, and they missed the gathering. They missed the assembly, and Paul wanted so badly to meet with them. Now we see that he had to wait 7 days in order to eat the Lord's Supper with them. He had to wait 7 days. There wasn't another day in between there where he could take the Lord's Supper with them. There was a specific day they did that, and that was on the first day of the week. On Sunday. The first century church assembled on the first day of the week. And also, you can find more proof for this in 1 Corinthians chapter 16. 1 Corinthians chapter 16, verse 2. On the first day of every week, each one of you is to put aside and save as he may prosper, so that no collections be made when I come. So again, Christians gathered on the first day of the week. So if we put this all together, of course, we're commanded to assemble, first off. We are commanded to take the Lord's Supper. And the first century church, they assembled specifically to take the Lord's Supper, and when they did assemble, it was on the first day of the week. So, logically, we have to take the Lord's Supper on the first day of the week. We have to take the Lord's Supper on Sunday mornings. Now, why is Sunday so special? Why is the Lord's Supper so special? Well, first off, you know, Sunday does have a historical significance in the church. You know, Christ's resurrection was on a Sunday. He was raised on a Sunday. And what better day to worship God than the one where we got our salvation? And also, the church was started on the day of Pentecost. Now, the day of Pentecost is designated as 50 days after the Passover ends. That Passover ends on a Sabbath. So you have 49 days, that's 7 weeks exactly, plus one day. That lands you on Sunday. Pentecost was on a Sunday. The church started on a Sunday. So there's obviously a lot of historical significance to Sunday worship. But also, There's more spiritual significance to it, right? Because taking the Lord's Supper, it brings us together. The Lord's Supper should bring us together. You know, we're all called to reflect on what Christ did for us, right? During our time here this morning, when we are taking the Lord's Supper, that time is set aside to, you know, put all other things out of our mind and focus on Christ and what he did for us, the salvation that he brought to us, right? And when all of us gather together to take this at the same time, this whole room is filled with people who are thinking about one thing, or should be thinking about one person, and that's really special, and it strengthens our bonds as Christians, right? It really does. Because again, if you look back to what we were talking about in 1 Corinthians 11 about how the church in Corinth didn't take the Lord's Supper in the correct way, right? They were divided. That's why they weren't, or that's why Paul says they weren't taking it in the right way. You know, he says, you know, there must be factions among you so that those who are approved may become evident among you. When you meet together, it is not to take the Lord's Supper, for in your eating, each one takes his own supper first, and one is hungry and another is drunk. Later on, down in verse 27, this is why Paul says this in verse 27, therefore, whoever eats the bread or drinks the cup of the Lord in an unworthy manner shall be guilty of the body and the blood of the Lord. The way that we take this Lord's Supper unworthily, the way that the Corinthian church was taking the Lord's Supper unworthily, was there were divisions. They were divided, right? They weren't one body. They had arguments between them. They didn't work it out. They were upset with one another, and that hindered their minds. They couldn't think clearly on Christ and on the more important spiritual matters. They couldn't set aside, you know, their pride and give up this argument to make their relationship with their brothers and sisters in Christ was really important. And so that's how they took it unworthily, and we can too. We can also take the Lord's Supper unworthily, but we should be brought together, right? We should be united as one body. And also, you know, the Lord's Supper is special because it shows our gratitude, right, and our true feelings toward Christ. You know, it's a time, again, where we set aside time specifically to remember what Christ did for us. You know, there are many ways that we can show thanks for what Christ has done for us. Many, many things just throughout our lives that we can do. We live our lives for Christ, right? But specifically on this morning and every Sunday morning, we have a time set aside where we specifically think about Christ and take that time to thank God. And this is very important for our spiritual well-being, right? And for the spiritual well-being of the whole church. You know, I know, if I end up missing Sunday morning worship, if I end up missing the Lord's Supper, that next week is hard. For some reason, the taking the Lord's Supper is like a reset for me. You know, I have this time where I can set aside all of other things and just thank God for what He has done for me. And that's a great thing. And it wears on the Christian who misses that service. And so, obviously, we need to recognize that the Lord's Supper is the whole purpose of Sunday morning worship. You know, it's why the first century church gathered on Sundays, and it's why we gather on Sundays as well, to take the Lord's Supper. You know, because the rest of this we could do any day of the week. We could do this all week long, preaching and singing and gathering together and worshiping together, but the Lord's Supper is for Sundays. And we have to understand how important that is. You know, it's important because as a congregation, it brings us together, right? It brings us together. It focuses all of us on one goal. And it's important personally because it reminds you of what Christ did. And it shows your true colors. You know, it shows what we truly care about. I want to ask a challenging question. What were you thinking about this morning during the Lord's Supper? What were you dwelling on? We know what it should be, right? We know what we should be thinking about, what we should be dwelling on during the Lord's Supper, and that's Christ. And the love that Christ had for us to come down to this earth, to live a full life, and then to die for us. But what were you thinking about? Were you distracted? You know, how we take the Lord's Supper is very important. We need to take it, in again, in a worthy manner, right? We need to We need our minds to be in the right spot. And this is, again, why I think that the Lord's Supper is such a good reset for our week, because we can, during this time, take this time to really focus on Christ and reset our minds and the way that we think, to be more focused around Christ for the rest of the week. And so that's what I want you guys to work on and to focus on next week, you know, throughout the week. But especially next week when you take the Lord's Supper, I want you to think about it. And I want to hopefully change your minds when it comes to what you think the most important thing in worship is, the most important act that we do in worship is. Because it's not the sermon. This lesson is not the most important thing that we do today. You know, it's the Lord's Supper. So if you haven't come to Christ, if you haven't found out what salvation we have in Christ, or you know, if you have drifted away, if you have, you know, perhaps forgotten about the salvation of Christ, if you want to come back, if there is anything else that you need, if you need encouragement, if you need somebody to study with, myself and the men of this congregation, the elders, would be more than happy to help you. So please come forward as we stand and as we sing.